In this video, we're going to talk about the question of what is the purpose of profit? What is profit? Does profit matter to God? And if so, how are we called to manage it as Christians? So first of all, let's dive into this question of what is profit? Simply put, earning a profit can be defined as simply selling something for more than it costs you to make it. So if you're selling something for $2, and it only costs you a dollar to make it, obviously you've made a dollar profit. That would be gross profit. And then you have your overhead expenses on top of that that would have to be paid out of the remainder. But hopefully there's something left over after that. Your profit doesn't make what you're selling less valuable. So I think one of the problems that people have with business when they have hang-ups about money and, oh, those, you know, capitalists or those people that are just money hungry, those people that are sort of top of the corporate ladder and all of these sort of stigmas, I think a lot of what they really wrestle with is this idea of profit and selling something for more than it cost you to make it. And so I just want to point out here that your profit doesn't make what you're selling any less valuable to that customer. All it is really a reflection of value that you've created and your efficiency, your ability to be able to get your costs down and to be able to render that product or service in the market at a price that the customer just couldn't get any other way. Were it not for your commitment to making that value and driving down your cost to make sure that you're able to bring that service or that product to the marketplace as cost effective and low, at the lowest price possible for that customer. And it enables us to multiply our resources. This is just a wonderful thing about profit, is that when you are profitable, when you're selling things at a higher price than it's costing you to make, hopefully in your business, it's not costing you more to produce what it is that you're selling. Otherwise, you're going to go out of business. Otherwise, maybe you're already out of business. In many cases, that's ultimately what drives companies out of business, is that it's costing them more to produce and render the services and products that they're trying to bring to the marketplace than they're able to sell them for. And so when we have profit, by producing profit, we are enabled to multiply our resources. And there's a term called scaling, where you have a service or a product and you're able to deliver that to the marketplace at scale. In other words, the customers just aren't, there's no way that they could just go get that product one off. When you've got a whole supply chain, you've got a whole manufacturing process, you've gone through the product development, all of that. I mean, for a customer to have to go through that process, it would just cost them way too much money. It would be cost prohibitive unless they were trying to set up a business, as you have, if you're that business owner that set up that manufacturing process to deliver that product to the marketplace. So it enables us to multiply our resources. And I'm going to go back to Truett Cathy, as we have a couple of times in this series, because it's just such a legendary Christian business leader. But this quote that I brought up in a previous segment on management, I think really gets to the heart of why God believes, why God created really profit, and why profit is so critical to us as business professionals. Where here's the scene. He's at this board meeting with the Chick-fil-A board, and they're really fearful about one of their other competitors and how this competitor seems to be rapidly advancing and kind of overtaking their share in the marketplace, or at least potentially they might be overtaking their share. And so they're thinking, we need to just start to expand much more aggressively. And so Truett Cathy slams his fist down on the table and says, "Gentlemen, I'm tired of hearing you talk about how we need to get bigger. If we get better at what we do, our customers will demand that we get bigger." So this is what profitability and profit generation is all about, is getting better at what you do. I mean, making that product or that service as excellent as possible, but then driving down the cost that is costing you to deliver that to your customer. And then when you do that, your customers are going to demand that you'll get bigger, and you'll have the margin, you'll have the profitability to be able to do that. So the purpose of profit then is to help your company grow. And another way of looking at it is that it also prevents it from dying, because without profit, a company will not grow. A company will die. Profit is like oxygen. So you don't enter life with the ultimate purpose of breathing oxygen. I mean, that would just be dumb. We're put on this earth for a much greater purpose than just breathing oxygen. But profit for a business is like that oxygen. I mean, you cannot survive without it. And not only is it going to help you to survive, but that profit is going to help your company to grow. And another great thought that I think really gets to the heart of what profitability in its purest form is all about, from Walt Disney, where, you know, he was accused of being this just kind of greedy filmmaker. And what he said in response to those critics was, "We don't make movies to make money. We make money to make more movies." And so that's what profitability does, is that it allows you then to have enough left over after you've paid all of your people, you've paid all of your cost of goods, you've paid all of the overhead, and now you have enough left over to then reinvest into bringing more of those products, into bringing more of those services, again, that are making value for the marketplace, as we talked about in a previous video. So profit is the oxygen to your business. And these are some of the reasons why profit matters to God. God, if you are bringing a service or product to the marketplace that is truly serving people, that is truly revealing the character and the heart of God in the way that you are helping to add value to people's lives. Again, this is what discipleship is all about, which is simply setting the standard. And that's what we're called to do as business professionals, as business leaders, as business owners, is to set the standard. And profit enables us to do more of that. And so profit matters to God. And you're probably familiar with the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. There's a very similar parable in Luke chapter 19, known as the parable of the minas. I actually have a research paper that I wrote on kind of the comparison between the parable of the talents and the parable of the minas, which we won't get into here in this video. I'll leave that there in the course notes so that you can take a look at that if you're interested. And I would certainly encourage you to do so, because this is a little bit of a sidebar discussion here. But looking at, you know, why are some of these differences? Why do they show up in the parables? When one parable is told a certain way, another parable is told another way, but they seem to be the same parable. Are they or are they not? In this case, they certainly are not. Luke 19, the parable of the minas; Matthew 25, the parable of the talents. These are distinctly different parables, even though they have some pretty clear similarities. But in Luke 19, the parable of the minas, the master, he is going away on business, and he says to engage in business until I come. In other words, make value until I come. And then when he comes back, then he said that he was actually a ruler, not a businessman per se. Then he said to those standing by, "Take this mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas." "Sir," they said, "he already has 10. He replied, "I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given. But as for the one who has nothing, in other words, he didn't generate any profit. He didn't generate any interest. He didn't even take it to the bank and just leave it there so that it would at least get that minimum return on investment from the interest of being in the bank. But as for the one who has nothing, even what they have will be taken away. And so this is the parable of the minas, where we get a clear picture of the character of God and the way that he expects that when there is a stewardship entrusted, as we talked about, how that essentially is what we are as business professionals. We are not owners. We are managers. We are not creators. We are stewards. We are formers and reformers. We don't just kind of bring things out of nothing. We are simply working with the things that God has already put into existence, and that if we will tune into the voice of the Holy Spirit, we will discover more and more of those creative ways to synergize some of these different things God has created, as we talked about in the innovation unit. But in this case, there's a clear picture here that God expects profitability. That even this guy that just buried his talent, that he just buried his mina, I'm referring back to the Matthew 25 parable of the talents, same thing here, where he just did not do anything. He didn't generate a profit. He didn't, because when you make value, inherently you are going to be generating profit as long as you're managing your costs well. But he says, to everyone who has, more will be given. That's profitability. That's when you are faithful with the capacity and you're fulfilling the capacity that you currently have, the master, which is God, which is Jesus, will expand your capacity for more. And there's a wonderful statement here said of the Proverbs 31 woman. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. And so when you see that word merchandise, that's really what it means. She actually brought goods to the marketplace and sold them at a profit. And that was a virtuous, honorable thing for her to do. And because that is the way that God views profit, he expects a return on the investment. So God values profitability. It helps your company to grow and prevents it from dying. It's like that oxygen, and God wants your business to grow. So what are some of those potential uses of profit? How are we called as stewards of the profit that we are? And again, we're simply stewards of the profit, even though we may be the quote unquote owner of the company in the earthly sense as it relates to the other people. From God's perspective, we are all simply stewards, because we have nothing that we have not received, as the Bible tells us. We brought nothing into this world, and we will take nothing out of it in the natural, in the physical, in the material. But what are some of those potential uses of profit? So if you were the owner, you are able to control that profit. Maybe one use is you might spend it on yourself, or save it for yourself. And so some of you, maybe if you've got sort of this employee mindset, you're like, oh yeah, that's what selfish owners do, is, you know, they just kind of spend that profit on themselves. They don't take care of anyone else in their company. Well, you know, owners certainly have a right to do with, you know, what their profit as they see fit. But ultimately, if you view yourself as a steward, to where you are working unto God, not unto yourself, you really need to get in touch and in tune with what it is that God's will is for that profit. I mean, I can tell you, in an early stage of a company, that profit, many times you're going to need to spend it on yourself. You're going to need to spend it on your family, because if you've kind of shaken off the golden handcuffs of your 9-to-5, maybe they're not so golden. Maybe they're more like a bronze handcuffs. But you've taken that leap into entrepreneurship to start your own business and you're pursuing profitability. You know, you're going to have to spend that money on your family. You're going to have to, in many cases, use your business as sort of like an ATM. And I can totally relate to that, and as I think anyone who has ever started a business can. Another use is to expand capacity. And so what might that look like? Maybe it means hiring more people to work in your company, more talent to grow in certain areas. And it could mean maybe you've got machinery that's broken in your factory and it's really causing a bottleneck in your process. And so if you could just expand your, maybe your machines aren't broken and you don't need necessarily to fix something. You just need another machine so that you could speed up your output. And that would be a capital expenditure. Research and development. This would be maybe things are going well in your company or you've kind of started to reach a point where you're not able to really grow as much exponentially in certain areas as you had in the past. And so maybe a great use of that profit would be to put it into research and development, to grow into new potential profit centers. Peter Drucker famously said that, and I'm paraphrasing here, that marketing and R&D, research and development, are the only things that matter in business. Everything else is a cost. Everything else really is just an expense, because the marketing, selling, the research and development of the innovation, that's what really brings the revenue into the business in order to enable it to do what it needs to do. Another potential use of profit would be to share it. And there's a variety of ways that you could share the profit. Potentially, maybe if in your company you have a profit sharing agreement with your employees, to where they have some equity, to where they have some skin in the game, and they're able to foster more of an owner mindset than just sort of a hired hand mindset. And so maybe another expression of that would be end of year bonus. I know people that are particularly in the sales profession where they've done well and the company does well. At the end of the year, they will then pay out a bonus. That's got to come out of the profit of the business. That just can't come out of the top line revenue. They have to see what is left. That's the profit, and then they can share that with the employees potentially. Maybe it shows up in employee care programs, and so maybe, and we talked about some of the things that, for example, the Polydeck Screen Corporation is doing. Maybe hiring a corporate chaplain, and you know, maybe I think the way that from the corporate chaplains that I've talked to and their marketing program, they don't even necessarily sell it as something that you just kind of do with your profit. But this really is so vital to your company. It's like it's just so essential, like a healthcare benefit or just taking care of your employees to make sure that their spiritual, emotional needs are met. There are many different employee care programs that can be funded through the profit of the business. And another use of profit is philanthropy. And certainly this is one that we like to talk a lot about in the Christian world, in the church world, because this, I mean, were it not for business owners and their philanthropy, where would the church be? I mean, without taking that money and investing it into other kingdom endeavors, because certainly the business, and I hope we've established this throughout this course, that the business itself is a kingdom endeavor if it's in the business of disciple making, which is to set the standard. Again, I'm going to constantly reiterate that throughout this course. But potentially philanthropy is a use of the profit. And I think really it ought to be a combination of all of these different potential uses of profit. I mean, is there anything wrong with an owner spending some profit on his or herself? Absolutely not. I think that's perfectly biblical. To expand capacity, to be able to render more of those goods and services that are making so much value for the marketplace. Absolutely. Research and development, even though it might seem like, you know, Thomas Edison famously said something along the lines of, you know, when he was asked by his critics about, you know, don't you get discouraged after all of these failed attempts at developing this light bulb that you have in your mind? He said, no, I just found 1,000 ways that it doesn't work. And so he knew that he was getting closer to it. So research and development, getting closer, I mean, just being willing to make that what might seem on the front end like a sacrifice, realizing that without innovation and research and development, that companies really, you know, companies going into the future just won't be able to survive. And then sharing with employees through potentially profit sharing or employee care programs, and then philanthropy with other charities and so forth are all wonderful uses of profit. And I want to point out here as well that you must have some ownership. And I put ownership in parentheses because we know in this course, with the worldview that we have as Bible-based Christians, that we are simply managers, that God is the one that owns it all. So as stewards, we are operating as though God owns it all, which he does, certainly. But you must have some ownership in the earthly sense to control the company's profit. And I want to bring you right over here to what Robert Kiyosaki has developed, this wonderful model that's really helped me understand this process of going from employee to self-employed to business owner to investor, which he calls the cash flow quadrant. So the employee is where probably about 80% of workers are. And so that's where you have a job. And so you're not able to necessarily control the profit. I mean, yeah, you might be the one in charge of carrying out the wishes and of the owners, but as they have directed, but typically the employees are not the ones who are controlling the profit. The self-employed is where you own a job. So maybe you're the only person in your company. And so if you were to stop working today or tomorrow, then your income most likely would stop. And that's where you own a job, because when you stop working, you stop showing up to work for your boss, you're not going to get paychecks anymore. And it's really the same way with self-employed. So what Robert Kiyosaki is encouraging people to do is to transition over to this right side of the cash flow quadrant. This is really game-changing stuff. I know that it was for me years ago. And then you need to become a potentially, and I want to qualify this, that everybody has a different calling. But if you sensing God leading you to be the one that is controlling profit, that is the one who, and I'm going to go back to this slide here, that you're the one who decides what that use of the profit is, you're going to need to become a business owner or an investor. And so with the business owner, you own a system and the people work for you. And so that's where everything sort of becomes, where you're delegating tasks. And now if you're to go on vacation, your income doesn't stop. Not because you have a 2-week paid vacation, but you could go for, you know, 3 months, your income would continue. You wouldn't get fired. That's what being a business owner is. And then for investors is where they are investing in those systems and their money is working for them as investors. And so ideally we could, if this is what our calling is, to be the ones who control the profit, we need to get onto this right side of the cash flow quadrant. Because employees are typically just paid enough to cover their own living expenses. They're not really given, and certainly I believe that we're all called to tithe regardless of whether employees or business owners, because God is interested in percentages, not necessarily in the gross amount. But to control profit, to produce profit, it's very difficult and kind of by definition impossible as an employee. Employees can generate the profit for the company, but they might not necessarily see any of that profit unless there's some profit sharing agreement that they agreed to upon getting hired. As an owner, I want to say, don't charge just enough to cover your expenses. This is the temptation that I faced early on as an entrepreneur, is that I don't want to scare anyone away from my prices, or from my company because of my prices. We're going to get into this in another section on marketing and sales. But, as it relates to this section on profitability, you have to charge more than it's costing you to produce that product or to render that service. Otherwise, there is no profit. So you have to charge enough to be profitable. And in this final slide here of this segment here on profit or profitability, I want to encourage you to be eternally profitable. And we can contrast the foolish rich man that Jesus talked about and the unrighteous steward. So the foolish rich man was the one that was, you know, he was just kind of fat and happy, and he had more than enough. And so instead of figuring out, how can I share this with others, he said, well, this is mine. You know, I earned all of this, or whatever his mindset was. Either way, he viewed himself as the ultimate owner. There wasn't any inkling of sharing it or putting it back into the marketplace to make that potentially turn into more profit, into more value in the marketplace. He decided, I just want to store this up in some barns. Oh no, my barns are full. So his solution was that he would go and build bigger barns, which is pretty ludicrous. So contrast that with the unrighteous steward, where the master saw that the guy just kind of screwed up everything in his company, and then what he did was that he ultimately just went out and started forgiving the debts of all of that master, all of that company owners, those who were indebted to him. And so this guy was, the unrighteous steward was a steward. He was the manager. He was not the owner. But he shared the profit by marking down these debts of those who owed his master. And so why is that to be? And actually the master commended him. And this is a characteristic of God, as we're seeing revealed here in the parable that Jesus is telling. I mean, why would the master commend this man for basically, and you know, one way of looking at it is it's almost like he defrauded him. And in many ways, he kind of did, because it wasn't really his place, at least the way that I read it, to be the one to just mark down so that whenever he got fired and was unemployed, that he would have friends, these people whose debts he marked down. But I think one of the lessons here is that we really shouldn't just view ourselves as owners. We should view ourselves as managers. And we should also be those who share the profit, who reinvest it. And again, that could look in a variety of ways. So sharing profit does not just mean giving to charities. It could mean in expanding the capacity of your business, hiring more people. I mean, what's better, to hire somebody or to give it to a charity? I don't know. It depends on what God is telling you to do. But certainly as far as just looking at the bottom line result of spiritual impact, financial impact, all of that, there's a case to be made there. And there's a concept here of a loss leader living. So what is a loss leader? It's living in such a way, a loss leader in and of itself is basically a product that a company might just sell at a loss. Like, one of the places I love to go here with my family is called Jason's Deli. And they have this amazing salad bar, and it just has always baffled me how they could sell a salad, unlimited, all-you-can-eat salad bar at such a low cost. And I was asking one of their managers about it. He's like, oh, yeah, that's our loss leader. We really don't make any money off of the salad bar. We just hope that people are going to order some of our other sandwiches or something else on the menu. So that's what a loss leader is. In a lot of ways, that's the way we're called to live our lives, as really the loss leader, where we're not trying to just accumulate a lot of money, a lot of fame, all of that here on earth, that we would truly lay up our treasures in heaven and live this life as a loss leader for the next life. And make no mistake about it, God promises rewards. It says in 2 Corinthians 5 verse 10 that we all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ. And that Greek word there is bema. It's the step up, where like it, what you're looking at in the Olympics, you know, stepping up to receive the reward of a job well done, so that each of us may receive what is due for us, for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. And so we are going to receive the things that are due to us, whether good or bad. So this is not talking about your eternal salvation. This is something beyond that, to where there will be rewards in heaven. And certainly just being able to have eternal life with Jesus Christ is an amazing reward. But there will also be rewards for the deeds done while in the body, as it says here in 2 Corinthians 5 verse 10. And Jesus gives us another taste of that when he says, then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So as we're seeking to be eternally profitable, it doesn't mean that we need to view it as, because sometimes we could say, oh, this is going to be a great PR opportunity or a great publicity opportunity for our company. If we give away all of this stuff, it's just going to establish a lot of goodwill. Really take a good look at your heart motivation for doing that. Because yes, discipleship, setting the standard, doing things that are setting the example for other companies, for other business leaders to follow, certainly is a worthy and godly motivation. But to do it just to get the praise, just to get our name in lights, to get our name on a building, to get, you know, whatever kind of accolades it is, that's not what God is going to reward. He's going to see what is done in secret, in our heart, really in our heart motivation. Yes, he'll reward us openly. See you in the next video.